Hi, and welcome to Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. I'm your host today, Dr. Amber Luong from the McGovern Medical School of the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston. Today, I invited Dr. Xiaoyang Hua, who just recently joined our department from the University of Iowa, where this work was done, to discuss his manuscript entitled Nasal Virus Infection Induces Asthma Exacerbation Through B-Cell Dependent Recruitment of Inflammatory Monocytes from this December's edition of IFAR. Welcome, Xiaoyang. How are you?
Good, thank you. Thanks for having me here today, and Happy New Year to you.
Oh, Happy New Year. Yeah, thanks for taking out some time today in this busy holiday season. So before we jump into your article, I wanted to have our listeners get to know you a little bit better. So tell me, you know, where did you do your residency?
I have a probably little not common background. So I grew up in China. Actually, I did my medical education back in China. I did my first residency in otolaryngology and practice as a rhinologist for about 3 years before I came to the United States. And then my first stop in the United States was at University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. So I did this research about the asthma, allergies, mast cell, biology, and I spent quite a few years over there. And then I decided to pursue a surgeon scientist path. So I, in 2012, I moved to University of Iowa. I did my second residency in otolaryngology. And also I did 2 years, this T32 research fellowship with Stanley Perelman at University of Iowa. So after my training, I moved to Duke and spent a year over there in Iowa. And then I moved to Houston recently. And that's kind of my experience.
Excellent. And, so have you always been intrigued by this whole, airway inflammation, unified airway, or are there other areas of expertise that you're interested in?
Yes, that's why I decided to go through this path. And when I was back in China, the person who trained me, actually, he trained with Stanberg, and actually he was the first surgeon in China, who probably one of the first of the few surgeons in China started in scalp sinus surgery after he came back from Austria. I spent quite a few years with, Dr. Stanberg and came back. At that time, the unified airway was proposed in 1998-ish, the end of the 1990s. And now we observed quite a lot of patients with asthma, with rhinosinusitis, and then we treated, the nasal polyps and treated the sinus infection or sinusitis. The asthma, symptoms, severity, getting better. So with that question, there are some papers, we just think about what was the mechanism between the upper and lower airways and how they interact with each other. That brought me to, came to the United States to do a research fellowship with the pulmonologist because I really want to see how the nose impact lungs immunologically. Mm-hmm. So my mentor, actually, his name is Steve Tilley. He's a pulmonologist. He's a physician scientist at UNC Chapel Hill. He does a lot of research about, asthma. So I spent quite a few years over there, and then as a postdoc, and then I was still kind of missing my clinical practice. So that's why I decided to redo my residency in otolaryngology. I moved to University of Iowa, and I spent 7 years over there. During my residency, I worked with Stanley Perelman, who is a coronavirus person. His name probably everywhere over the past few years because he's one of the few people who does a lot of research about coronavirus in the United States. So when I joined his lab as a research fellow, and I have the question, so before when I was at UNC, I just used the allergen, asthma, everything's allergic and allergies. And when I joined his lab, and I was thinking about, what about the virus infection? And because at that point, we know that asthma exacerbation, 80% of asthma exacerbation is caused by upper respiratory virus infection. And people think this is directly virus infection into the lungs. And the old school actually is that with the rhinovirus, for example, that caused it's a rhinovirus because it's a nose virus. I know it's controversial. People think the rhinovirus caused a nasal infection, somehow caused asthma exacerbation. And the mechanism is still very controversial. I think there are a lot of things we don't know that. So with that question, I would just think about, what if I give you the virus infection in the nose and I see what's going to happen in the lungs? And that's the first experiment we did. I just use a MHV1 virus. It's a coronavirus. Actually, it's a very small volume. We go down to 0.25 microliter per nostril. And we, examine the lungs, use the RT-PCR. We check the plus the time you check the cell numbers in the bronchial alveolar lavage fluids. We checked the mediastinal lymph nodes. We did not see any trace of a direct infection in the lungs.
Well, so let me back you up, because you kind of dive right into the, I guess, yeah, the background, but you're giving some great background information for us. So basically, what you're telling me is that you became interested in trying to really understand how the upper airway influences the lower airway, especially as it associated with asthma. And I guess what I'm hearing is you started out with the coronavirus first. Okay. Now this study, though, so this is a perfect background leading into the study. So let's just dive right in. The current study, though, you're looking at RSV, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. But the background study you were telling me is that when you did the infection in the upper airway, you specifically did it in a manner so that you did not see active virus in the lower airway. So I guess that's where it led you to think about maybe there's some other mechanisms other than the virus directly inflaming the lungs, exacerbating their asthma symptoms. Is that correct?
That's correct. Because, you know, we use a different virus. We use a coronavirus, which is called MHV1. Another coronavirus is called MHVJH, different strain. And we also use the RSV. The virus they put in the nose, it's not really, it's just activated nasal mucosa immune system. That's just like the immune activator. Okay. It's activated immune system. We're trying to see how this activation of the immune system in the nose, in nasal mucosa, in the upper airway, how does impact the entire airway? Even before the virus or before the allergen or the pathogen hit the lungs. And that's just kind of a general picture. And so that's kind of the whole idea. Well, the RSV virus in this paper is not really to study RSV virus caused asthma exacerbation. It's basically just RSV virus is a tool that we use to activate immune system in the nasal cavity.
So yeah, you mentioned this term that I had to try to better understand, but what do you mean by nasal restricted infection? How did you do that with the RSV? And just so that our listeners understand, this is an animal model, mouse model study primarily.
That's right.
So, okay. So tell me, what is a nasal restricted infection? What did that mean?
So we just want to make sure the virus did not spread into the lungs when they chant the mice. And we use a very small volume, and we go down to 0.25. I think as we did the pilot experiment, what we did was that we used a dye and use a different volume and put in a nasal cavity. And then we take the lungs out of the lavage lungs and see what is the maximum volume that caused the chant to stay in the nose without being aspirated into the lungs. And the safe number is 5 microliters per nostril.
Okay.
So we even go down to, well, then we use a much lower one, you know, 1 microliter. I think in this paper, we use 2 microliter you know, per nostril, very low volume. So after we give this virus infection, we use the RT-PCR, we check the lungs. We did not see any trace of or direct infection of the lungs. We wanted, because the whole purpose we're trying to, of this study is to see how the, like what I said, how the nasal virus infection hit the lungs, regulate the lung immune response before the virus directly hit the lungs, directly enter the lungs. Is that makes sense? Because the one maybe is in the other way to look at this one, because the nose is the first point of the contact with the outside world. So everything we hit the nose first. And we think that when the head hit the nose, they spread into the lungs. But actually, there may be another layer of a mechanism that the nose regulated the immune response in the lungs before the virus or the pathogen hit the lungs directly. It's just there's some kind of a, you know, I mean, I would say like a warning or like a, you know, alarm system or something like that, because the nose is just the first appointment of contact.
So I think it's important to understand what the model that you're using, just for at least for this particular study. You used a mouse model and established house dust mite allergic asthma in this mouse model first, right? So you had a mouse, and then you either had naive, meaning you didn't challenge them with anything in their nose or just regular saline. And then you created a mouse model where they were challenged for several weeks with house dust mite, which is the protocol to establish allergic asthma. So this mouse would have allergic asthma to house dust mite trigger. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And then you, in that background, you then did this kind of nasal restricted infection with the RSV virus to see what would happen if it exacerbated, and then tried to understand the mechanism of that exacerbation of the airway hyperreactivity.
That's right. That's exactly how we designed this experiment that we are in this study. You know, it's because, you know, clinically, we know that the virus infection in the, you know, the upper respiratory virus infection is the number one cause of asthma exacerbation. Okay. However, there's some kind of a very interesting observation published by different groups. The first one is that, you know, like what I said, the rhinovirus of the old school is that they don't, that you can't tolerate the very high temperature in the lungs. They do not grow very well. They do not expand very well. They're like the 33 degree in the nasal cavity, it's cooler temperature. That's why I call it the rhinovirus. I know it's very controversial, but there are some study that show that, for example, when the people died from asthma exacerbation, they take the lungs out. They're trying to see whether they can find some live virus in the lungs. They're not finding live virus, which does raise the question: is that really because of the virus? You know, the asthma exacerbation is because of direct lung infection or something in the nose that exacerbated the immune response in the lungs and caused asthma exacerbation.
So, it's what did you find?
So we found that, you know, well, another kind of a, you know, clinical evidence, like an interesting finding is that in a patient with a non-active asthma, for example, when you put the virus direct, the rhinovirus direct in the nose, they do not have asthma exacerbation. So what it means is there's a possible explanation that the virus that caused the asthma exacerbation is probably the combination. You need an allergic response, and in the meantime, you have virus infection. So our hypothesis is that the virus infection somehow exacerbated the immune response to allergens. The allergen may be subclinical dose. You know, in a normal circumstance, it does not cause asthma exacerbation. But when a virus hit the nose, they somehow enhance the immune response in the lungs, and they make that subclinical exposure to the allergens to be a clinical exacerbation. That's kind of what we're trying to do. What we found that we give a very, like what I said, we trained the mice with, we synthesized mice and with, you know, house dust mite for about 4 weeks. And then we give a virus infection. And the last dose, we give a diluted house dust mite directly into the lungs. And then we compare how does the virus infection, how to change the immune response to the last challenge, house dust mite challenge directly delivered into the lungs. That's how we designed this experiment. We found that the virus infection in the nose, they exacerbate cause, you know, more robust Th2 response, more robust Th17 response, and also cause, you know, airway hyperresponsiveness.
Well, both of those Th2 and Th17 are linked to asthma.
So
it exacerbated those immune responses that are already associated with asthma.
Yeah.
Okay. And then I think you talked about, like, you actually went into details, the cellular description of the mechanism. So I think you linked it to recruitment of monocytes, and it was B cells that seem to drive this recruitment of monocytes that may end up exacerbating these Th2, Th17 responses, and then ultimately clinically resulting in a more asthma exacerbation, which, you know, clinically it shows up as airway hyperreactivity, right? So shortness of breath, those kind of things.
That's correct. The monocytes, the observation actually was, not only, you know, we observed quite a few times with different kind of virus infection in the nose without causing a direct lung infection. And I think our data, you know, indicate that the recruitment of the monocytes into the lungs is very different when you give the virus into the nose versus you give the virus into the lungs. Because if you give the lungs direct infection, this infiltration is type 1 interferon dependent. Because if you use a type 1 receptor knockout mice, you will not see that infiltration. However, if you get this virus in the nose and the infiltration, you know, still there, regardless, even with the mice with type 1 interferon receptor knockout mice, which means they have different mechanisms to recruit this kind of cells into the lungs when you give the virus into the nose versus directly into the lung. Let me rephrase that. when you give the virus directly into the nose versus directly into the lungs. So that's one thing. In this paper, we use RSV, we use a very small volume. We observed the same kind of a infiltration of monocytes, licensed inflammatory monocytes into the lungs. And that's the same with other virus, which I think is probably not virus specific.
Okay.
It's more kind of a nasal infection, and then somehow the nasal mucosa immune response can recruit this kind of cells into lungs. Doesn't matter what kind of a virus infection you have or cause the nasal infection. And a very interesting finding that when we use the B cell knockout mice, we did not see any monocyte infiltration in the lungs after nasal virus infection. They just give us, indicate or suggest that the B cell in the nose, and actually they have some kind of a, regulatory access, to recruit the monocytes into the lungs, because that's kind of interesting. I think there is some kind of cellular, interaction. I think that leads us with the B cell or certain B cells. They can recruit the cells into the lungs with through the mechanism we're still trying to define.
I see. Well, you did measure a couple of chemokines that are critical for monocyte recruitment. What are the typical cellular sources of those chemokines that you saw that were increased? Are they from B cells or are they from other cellular types?
It's a great question. I think that we found that the CCL2, CCL7, both are very potent chemokines for the monocytes. They basically, they recruit the this kind of monocyte from bone marrow to the peripheral organs. And we found that even give this in naive animals, they give the virus infection in the nose, the expression of the CCL2 and the CCL7 is dramatically increased in the lungs.
Okay.
So that explains why you can see this monocyte infiltration in the lungs, even in the absence of direct lung infection. And in terms of source, after the nasal virus infection, we take the nasal search lymphoid tissue out, which is like a mouse tonsil or adenoids.
Okay.
And we take that out. We found that the certain B cell population in the nasal search lymphoid tissue, that you can see the increased expression of CCL2 to CCL7, which means at least the B cells is probably one of the sources. Not, maybe I can't tell whether that's the only source or maybe it's one of the sources that contributed to the increased expression or the secretion of CCL2, CCL7 into the lungs.
But then you're implying that the B cells must somehow then actually migrate themselves to the lungs, right? To then release the particular chemokine. Otherwise, they would just be recruited to the nose.
Exactly. I think so. That the reason that we have this hypothesis is because that when we take the nasal lymphoid tissue out, we just do the explant. We put in the incubator, and then we drop the virus directly onto the nasal surgeon lymphoid tissue, and then we count the cells. And in the culture media versus in the tissue, we found when you put the virus, directly on the explant, you can see the more B cells actually they have activated B cells, more activated B cells in the media of the culture media. If you compare the activated B cell numbers in the tissue, that means that when you have the virus infection in the nose, nasal, social, lymphoid tissue, the B cell can migrate, can sneak out from the mucosal immune, this organ, the nasal surgeon lymphoid tissue, like mouse tonsil or adenoids. That just gives you an expression, that a possible explanation that these cells might be able to migrate to the airway. Another background I think is very interesting finding is that, I think that was at the old paper, probably 20 years ago, that they used the human tonsil B cells. And they basically just prepare the cells to suspension and inject these cells into the mouse peritoneal cavity. And then when they look at the trace the cell, they found these cells actually only found the cell in the lungs, but not in the gut. So what does it mean that the mucosal, the cells, the B cells in population in the airway or tonsil or the in this area, they might have this homing mechanism. What does it mean is when you inject the cell back into the peritoneal cavity, they're not going to migrate to anywhere. They have a special target, the person that they have a home to go. So that's a very interesting, the support. Actually, this is the one paper. Lately, I think that there are two more papers published that show the same kind of this kind of a phenomenon, because, they found that the human tonsil B cells or upper airway B cells, they preferentially migrate to, the airway. to the salivary glands and or this area, but not in the gut, not everywhere.
Got it.
So they have some kind of homing mechanism behind, this finding.
So that's perfect. So just to kind of wrap up for our listeners, tell me your take-home message from this paper.
So I think we're trying to make the nose bigger. And frankly, I think the nose is, I think it's a lot of times people, it's kind of like, you can bypass the upper airway. But I think our data suggests that the nose probably do more than what we have thought, you know, mm-hmm. because they might be a very important kind of organ that can regulate the immunity in the lungs. They'll not only cause asthma exacerbation, another one is that maybe if we can identify the cellular mechanism between the nose-lung crosstalk, and one day we might be able to, you know, develop some kind of treatment, you know, to target this cell population to treat the lung diseases, even some very bad, you know, this kind of a virus infection or, pneumonia.
Very exciting. Another thing that you made me think about was, you know, you're talking about this mechanism in a mouse model that already had allergic asthma. You know, and before I read your paper, I was more familiar with, you know, people talking about viral infections as a risk factor for developing asthma in babies, for example. And so there have been a couple of cohort studies where they followed young, you know, babies who had a family history or, you know, a parent with, you know, allergies or atopy, and they just kind of followed them, thousands of babies, and then found that those that had increased RSV infections and so forth had a higher risk of developing allergic asthma. Is this a similar mechanism that you're describing, or do you think that there's probably other things going on in terms of the development of asthma versus like the exacerbation in the presence of an allergen in someone who already has allergic asthma?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I also read the papers, some of the papers before. I think the RSV, early RSV exposure, they increase the risk of developing asthma in a general population. I think that the paper of this paper probably is a different kind of purpose. We're trying to see, and RSV is like a tool. It's not really to study how the RSV virus infection caused, you know, asthma exacerbation. It's more kind of virus infection in the nose, how that caused asthma exacerbation. Because we originally were wanting to use rhinovirus, which is the number one cause of asthma exacerbation. And but the problem at that time is just because rhinovirus was very hard to get, and also did not infect the mice very well.
I see.
So that's the reason we switched to RSV virus and instead of the rhinovirus. But we're actually talking to other people. We're trying to get some rhinovirus and to see whether we can see the same kind of, you know, findings with RSV virus infection in the nose. And that will be another tool that to activate the nasal immune system, using the virus.
So yours is more of a global trying to understand how the sort of the upper airway is kind of an alarm system, a security system to sort of alert the lower airway, like, hey, look, we're being exposed to virus. We may not even get sick. You may have a little bit of runny nose, but this may cause some worsening or upregulate the immune response to protect from even more severe infections like pneumonias or something like that. But as a byproduct, it may exacerbate allergic asthma symptoms in someone who already has allergic asthma. Is that kind of like the bigger picture I got?
Yeah.
So, I mean, other than that clinical implication for someone who has allergic asthma, and, you know, you can't really protect yourself necessarily from a viral infection. It's going to happen. Are there some therapeutic clinical implications for someone who has allergic asthma, what they can do to minimize allergic asthma exacerbations? A lot of these things send patients to the emergency room. So is your understanding, is there something that an allergic asthma patient can do to sort of minimize these exacerbations?
Yeah, I think that's, again, a great, great question. I think that from bench to bedside, there will be a long, you know, path to go. But I think in the future, I was hoping that if we can identify the cellular mechanism that behind this nose-lung crosstalk, and that might be one of the mechanisms that cause asthma exacerbation after upper respiratory virus infection. If we can find these cells, we might be able to develop some to target this group of cells to treat patients with asthma or exacerbation following a common cold. That would be another thing. But I think, again, I mean, this is a really kind of we're trying to find a more mechanism. I think it's still at the bench side, not the bedside.
Got it. No, I understand. Yeah, I mean, that's, we basically need to understand the molecular mechanisms that can then ultimately translate to some novel therapeutic options for these kind of scenarios.
I hope that's one day we can figure out more mechanisms. That's
very good. Well, very exciting work. Thank you so much, Xiaoyang, for sharing your expertise with us and the background. So for those of you who want to learn more, again, this article was published in this December's issue of IFAR, entitled Nasal Virus Infection Induces Asthma Exacerbation Through B-Cell Dependent Recruitment of Inflammatory Monocytes. Xiaoyang, thank you again. Happy holidays. Happy New Year. And look forward to more work coming from you and your lab in the coming future.
Thank you very much for having me here, and a Happy New Year to you and your family as well.
All right. Thank you.